Hi, I'm Mike Judge, and you're listening to the Pantheon Network.
Hey, I'm Nick DiMatteo, and welcome to Season 5, Episode 35 of MXG. Music is not a genre. Thank you, as always, for watching and listening. Don't forget, you can support this podcast at patreon.com/musicisnotagenre. You're going to want to join that because there's a lot of exclusive content that's been happening lately, primarily new tracks from my band Rec's upcoming album that no one else in the world gets to hear except for a few close, you know, family members and my people on Patreon. And no one's going to get to hear that for a while. So that's a perfect time for you to join for as little as $5 a month. You get so much more than just that exclusive content. You get early releases of all the podcasts, of anything else I do. You get discounts on tickets. You get discounts on t-shirts and all of that. I urge you, please. I take more time to talk about this in these podcasts because, as I've said before, I noticed that regardless of the size of the podcasts and how many, you know, fans, how popular it is, how long it's been on, this is how most podcasts are supported. And I want to continue to do this work and to continue to improve and upgrade what I'm doing and, you know, expand my team of one and a half and all of that each season. And you, not anyone else, you are the way that that happens. So please give that a consideration. Please also go to youtube.com/@musicisnotagenre. If you're just a listener, you're missing some beauty. You're missing some insanity. You're missing some fun video, basically. I do videos of every single podcast and podfast that I put out. And you not only get to see that, you get to see some of the live music cuts that I've done and a bunch of other things, videos I've created in my band Rec's YouTube page. So please go to youtube.com/@musicisnotagenre. Follow it, subscribe, whatever you call it, and like and comment. And then go to nickdimatteo.com. I just finished a whole bunch of upgrades to my website. You find everything there, this podcast, all of the music that I've done, or most of it, the voiceovers and acting and graphic design, t-shirts, my blog, ways to contact me directly, sign up for my newsletter. It's all free, you know. And I'm excited about these new changes to the website. I may even do a special podcast on it at some point, or if not, if you go onto any of my social and all the socials at nickdimatteo.com, you'll see posts in the upcoming weeks about the changes to the website and how much easier it is to find the music anywhere you listen to it. And then, speaking of music, listen to and support my band Rec at recarea.bandcamp.com. Rec is spelled R-E-C, if you didn't guess. Again, a lot of new stuff coming up, so a good time to do that. And Bandcamp is a good place to support. It's a place where you can, again, subscribe for as little as $5 a month. You could buy one song for $1, even, if that's all you can handle, or just or an album for $6-$7, I think, one time, if you don't want to do something monthly. But please consider patronizing that, because we as musicians get more money from Bandcamp than we do, and from sources like that, than we do from any other streaming service, hands down. So let's get to this week's topic, and that is the freewheeling catch-up machine number 4. I mostly just watch TV. So you might be asking yourself, or not, why am I doing a catch-up machine now when it's episode 35 and I usually do at least 40 episodes a season? It's not the end of the season. Well, that's because the season is going to be longer. As I mentioned in one of my recent episodes, I'm going to do my best to release something each week, one thing each week, even if it's a podcast, whatever it might be, for the entire year. There might be a week or two that I'm taking off, whatever. But since I'm doing that, and the season will be extended almost straight into, you know, tiny break before season 6, I may as well do another catch up at the end of the season. It would be crazy to catch up, you know, with 30 odd episodes. So that's why I'm doing it now. Yeah. Also, did you notice my new intro? It's not a new intro. My intro is the same, but that tag at the beginning, Mike Judge, creator of Office Space and Beavis and Butthead. Of course, you heard the voices. I'm really excited about that because I am, and my Music Is Not a Genre is a part of the Pantheon Network now, and we get access to those station IDs. And he's one of my favorite creators. It works perfectly for this episode because we're going to be talking about TV and music. And what is Beavis and Butthead, if not a, you know, combination of TV and music in its own weird way, in both the old run and the brand new episodes that have come along that I absolutely love. So, and be on the listen or lookout for that station ID or new other station IDs from other celebrities and people in the music world, especially, but also in the comedy world in future episodes. I may do it for each episode. I may not. We'll see. And then finally, before we get into the meat of all of this, I wanted to show you something. This is why Patreon is so important. This is why Bandcamp is so important. Right here, those of you just listening, here's what I'm showing. I will describe. Set of headphones. These headphones, Audio-Technica, good quality from the lower budget, you know, selection. I have had these for well over a decade. I could be 15, 20 years, don't know. But if you notice, and again, if you can't see, I'll tell you, the stuffing, the padding is coming out on the right side. It has been coming out for years, but finally just decided I'm done. I'm falling out completely. And the whole pad itself, I've tried to re-glue this several times and it just doesn't stick, probably because I get hot when I'm recording, but who knows why. Maybe I'm using the wrong glue. Point being, I worked these to death and finally decided to get a new pair, which I'm now using. But I wanted to show you these before I threw them out, really, to show you how long and how much I use equipment. A lot of what I work with, whether it's for the podcast or for, you know, music recording, music creation, is using equipment and software that is super old. Some of it is free because that's the best, you know, that's the price, that the point that works for me. But this is a perfect example. This is an exemplar of what happens when you're working on a lower budget. Now, again, like I said, I did finally upgrade the headphones and I'm glad I did. And there have been a few things here and there. Notice next to above the avocados. And if you're just listening, there's a speaker back there. Got those a couple of years ago. I needed new monitors. I realized these are upgrades that are important, but I try to go bare bones because that's the budget I have. But everything I'm doing, my sound, my video, the everything will be vastly improved with your support. But I also wanted to just say this because this is what hardworking musicians do. You know, they find something they like, they use it to death. I mean, my favorite guitar is over 20 years old, you know, which is young compared to a lot of guys I know and the guitars that they have and how long they've had their equipment. So, you know, here, take a good listen to what I'm doing with the headphones. Ready? Yep, just threw them on the floor. So that's the story there. And now let's get into this catch-up. The reason I subtitle it, I mostly just watch TV, it's two reasons. One, because I've gotten the most response, the most comments of any episode from episode 21 since the last catch-up to now on the TV music episode. So when I get to that, I'm doing them kind of chronologically. I will talk about all the comments, wonderful comments from fans and people, and some other things that I left out that I forgot, which happens all the time. As much research and prep as I do, that's just going to happen, you know. And then the second reason is because I have been thinking, and this is years, but especially more recently, a lot about something called sync licensing, which has to do with film and these days, especially television and commercials and a whole bunch of other things. And when I get, again, to the TV episode, I'm going to talk a little bit about sync licensing. So if you are a musician, or if you've ever heard that, you're not a musician, you've ever heard that phrase, you want to know what it is, how to do it and why, etc., I'll talk a little bit about that. I won't go into super depth, but it's part of my effort to provide free information for people who need it. As I mentioned in that episode, Don't Wait to Be Great, you know, the self-help hype and all, which I'll just comment on now. Surprised that I didn't get a lot more pushback on that or more comments. But, you know, there are things that you should pay for, like good musicians, someone to maybe mix and master your music, or technicians who are helping you. I edit a lot of other people's podcasts and I get paid for that. And those are services. But for information, I believe that, especially if it's information on how to do something in particular, that it should be free. And for advice, oh God, yeah, it should be free. So I'm going to provide a little bit of that. I'll try to do that, you know, every couple of episodes or so.
Hey, Pantheon listeners, Christian Swain here, taking a break from listening to a little Shout It Out Loudcast episode. Love Tom and Zeus talking all things Kiss. Of course, I was listening to them on my new Raycon wireless earbuds. They have quickly become my go-to earbuds because of the comfort. These soft tips are the best I've ever used. And at this price, plus a Pantheon discount, Raycon is really hitting on all marks. Sound quality is great too. I really love having these three EQ options because I like more bass in the music, but less in my podcast. 8 hours of playtime for the battery is great as well. Surround sound, noise isolating, and awareness mode are all included. These are great earbuds. Go to buyraycon.com/pantheon today to get 20% off your Raycon order plus free shipping. That's right. You'll get 20% off and free shipping at buyraycon.com/pantheon. buyraycon.com/pantheon. Hey, Pantheon listeners, Christian Swain here. Another day, another podcast I'm working on. This time, it's Famous and Gravy with Amit and Michael. I want to let you know that I loved the Factor Meals package so much that I re-upped for myself, and then I sent a package to my in-laws. Like I was with my first shipment from Factor Meals, the in-laws were as excited to try one of the prepared restaurant-quality meals. Well, they got the shipment to Protein Plus Meal Plan and were very impressed. See, being in their 80s, anything to make the meal prep easy is a plus for them. They heated the oven per instructions and minutes later were enjoying a very delicious, nutritious, and dietitian-approved meal. One big win for me. But what really floored them was the taste. Like I told you, it's surprising how good these meals taste. Restaurant quality indeed. And like my own shipment, it really was everything Factor Meals said it would be for some seniors. No prep, no mess meals. Factor Meals are 100% ready to heat and eat. Take it from me and my in-laws. Head to factormeals.com/pantheon50 and use the code Pantheon50 to get 50% off. That's factormeals.com/pantheon50 and use the code Pantheon50 to get 50% off. Thank you, Factor Meals.
So let's get into this for real. Episode 21, starting right after the last catch-up episode, was on the Beatles' third episode of my 6-part series on the Beatles. I've done 5 of those so far. There's only one more to go in a few weeks from now. That will debut, and I will promote all 6 of those episodes, plus the 7th, which is about books and movies and stuff like that. I would love to get your feedback on any of these. As always, I am going to be doing more sub-series like that. I have the, you know, the Death is Dumb and the Music is Everything and the Podfasts and the Beatles. I'm going to be doing another one, that a couple more new ones that I'm coming up with soon that I'm very excited about. One is I'll be talking to other musicians, music creators, people in the music realm in any way about the topics that they are interested in. The first one will be with the guy I've mentioned quite often, a writer and critic and filmmaker, musician himself, Steve Erickson. And we'll be talking about global music. That should come up in a couple of weeks, hopefully. And I have some other people that I'm working on lining up for that. And then the second thing is things like fun things. Well, I mean, not that that's not fun. Things like I will be doing my favorite albums from each year decade by decade. So each episode will cover a specific decade, and I'll go year by year, you know. And I like this because I like creating playlists, and I like sub-series because they kind of all go together. And it's just fun for me, especially I'm looking for a lot more new content. And that's another thing that Patreon helps with. If you're a Patreon member, you get to suggest topics, and I will more likely follow those suggestions than anywhere from anywhere else. So please consider that. Also, for the Beatles thing, someone really loved my acoustic cover of I Am the Walrus. So if you haven't heard that, go to youtube.com/@musicisnotagenre and look up, search for I Am the Walrus, and you'll find it there. Or Nick DiMatteo, I Am the Walrus, however you want to search for it. It was fun playing acoustic. The next episode, or shortly after that, was My Death is Dumb on Bowie. And two things on that. One is my wife recently showed me an Insta clip of him talking to a reporter in 1983, I believe. You know, his big quote-unquote comeback about hip-hop and how hip-hop was doing the most interesting and innovative music over and above anything else. And it wasn't that rock wasn't doing good music, but rock kind of had its innovation 20 years before. And, you know, hip-hop is speaking more to the culture and more to, you know, political and social things, et cetera, et cetera. And I found it interesting, and I will say this off the bat. I don't read comments on other people's posts. If it's my post, of course. It's a courtesy, and you've taken the time to comment. Somebody else's post, I do not go into that thread because there are a lot of trolls and there are a lot of misguided people who miss the point, who misinterpret, and it just, it incenses me too much to focus on that, so I don't do it. But I know people who do, and so I, you know, my wife told me that there were some comments about people pushing back on what hip hop means or how, you know, it compares to rock, et cetera, et cetera. And there were some heinous things there, but, and the person was, I think, trying to make a good point, which they seemed to think was refuting what Bowie was saying, you know, and I don't agree. I think that it added to what Bowie was saying, but in a really weird way, and which is you're talking about hip hop from 2023, 40 years after he made these comments. And, you know, if you didn't grow up in the 80s and don't remember what hip hop was like at the time and how, you know, it had already been around for several years and it would take several more for it to get to a place of domination or to pass a place of novelty in the ears of many people, then you would know that in 83, everything he said was just 100% accurate, and that in many ways, it was still very much an underground music. So I wanted to make that comment, especially since I'm going to be talking right next about the episode on UK hip hop. And also quickly that because I did that Bowie episode and did all that research, I was fortunate enough very soon after to be a guest on Christy Hallberg's podcast, Rock is Lit. She's also part of the Pantheon Network, talking about Bowie's Berlin years. So hello, Christy, if you're listening or watching, and thank you for the opportunity. That was really fun. So that brings me to the next episode, again, which is on hip-hop. And it was my UK hip-hop episode. One thing. And I take the blame for this, and that is that I took a point that I wanted to make about the general qualities of UK music, all kinds, as compared to US music. And I think I made that point, and I did explain that it was a general point in the episode. But I used it as an entry to talk about the streets and Dizzy Rascal and UK hip-hop, and I tried to be fairly thorough about that. But it was, to be fair, a weird kind of cross, which is what Music is Non-Genre loves to do anyway. But even with those standards, it was a weird crossover. And I think that it may have made the impression that I was saying that UK hip-hop in general is better than US hip-hop. And that's a judgment no one can make. But I will give credit to a guy on LinkedIn who was part of, I think, a group that was a hip-hop group. Not a music group, but a LinkedIn group about hip-hop saying, no way, man, U.S. hip hop has it all over any other kind of hip hop, et cetera, et cetera. And say, you know, saying that no, there's no way that UK hip hop could be better than that. And here's the thing, whether you agree or disagree, one thing you can say about that is that, like jazz, hip hop originated in the United States. And like jazz, it has spread across the world now. So you're going to find excellent jazz, excellent hip hop everywhere, including in the UK. But you have to give a huge amount of credit to the United States, to the Bronx, you know, and everywhere else that it blew up and started over and above other countries. Whether or not I happen to prefer the production values of UK hip hop, UK pop, UK rock, and I do prefer, 9 times out of 10, prefer UK's approach to those kinds of music and most kinds of music than others. It still has to be said that, you know, the U.S., I mean, you know, pioneers of hip hop. All right, next one is Podfast 8. And I've been doing more podfasts lately. Quick note on why. I've been busy. I'm recording an album. I'm gigging more. Live concerts and working on a bunch of other things that has taken up my time. It's made it more difficult for me to keep this pace. And again, that's where Patreon comes in, because this is not a full-time job for me. And I don't ever want it to be the full-time job, but I would like it to be more impactful weekly than it is now. And I then would allow me to devote more time to it. I could set aside other things that I'm doing that are, you know, good jobs, but not necessarily my first choice, and focus more on this. If you, no one else, you, just hop over to Patreon, $5 a month. In fact, it's free for the first week. It's free. Whether you're doing $5, $10, $25, $50 a month, you get 7 days free trial on patreon.com/musicisnotagenre and decide whether or not you like it. So that's hopefully an incentive. But anyway, I did a podfast, one of many this half or this third of the season, and it was the Sideways 8 podcast, the one about the exact number of music genres. The only reason I'm mentioning this is because I'm surprised it did not get more of a response. I know I was kind of playing around, and then I mentioned a whole bunch of genres, and I think I numbered in them at, what was it, 14,000 or something like that, but that you could boil them all down to a core 8. I'd like, and I will probably do this with one of my future guests, I'd like to have more of a discussion on the state of genres in general. And I've talked about the history of them and where they are now and how they compare to what I said in that podcast. So if you have comments and your opinions on whether or not you think my core 8 cover can potentially cover all other existing genres and subgenres, I'd love to hear from you. We really want to hear from you on that. Next one, and this here's the big one. This is the nut of this, right in the middle, hopefully. I don't know. I don't time things, by the way, so I'm going to say this because I just talked about a podfast. I try to keep my podfasts short and certainly shorter than my regular episodes. And I try to keep my regular episodes not super duper long. We're not talking, 90 minutes, 2 or 3 hours. They've been coming in a little longer lately because I've been digging deeper and I've been more thorough and I've taken a slightly different approach this season to some of the topics that I've done. They've all been over 45 minutes, and many have been an hour or more. Podfasts tend to come in at around 20, 25 minutes, but the last podfast I did was like 38 minutes. Now, does that even qualify as a podfast anymore, or is that just like a short episode? I mean, well, you got to think of it this way. When does a short story become a novella? And when does a novella become a novel? And the answer is, who cares? There have been really short novels that someone could have called a novella, but they called it a novel, and vice versa, you know? Or short stories that were so long that they should have been called novellas, you know, and things like that. I stand by the fact that my approach to my podcasts is different from the regular podcasts. And also, no one has commented on this. So I'm not actually arguing with anybody. I just decided to mention it because I find all this really fun. I really do. And I hope you feel a lot of that fun. So that brings us to the big one, the TV themes, TV music. There were a couple of, a handful of TV theme songs that I missed, one of which I should just erase the entire video and redo it, frankly, because I can't believe I missed it. And I'm going to mention those, and then I'm going to mention some comments from people. And here are some that some people brought up. And thank you. My parents in particular, some friends and fans brought up ones that I missed and others that I thought of and that like, oh, again, I forgot those. Secret Agent Man. I mean, rock bands have done covers of that one. 77 Sunset Strip. Snap, snap. I can't get the snap up on the mic. Love American Style. If you don't know that show from the 70s, it's kitschy now, but I don't know how many episodes I saw. I just, for some reason, remember the main part of that theme. Love American Style or something like that. I just thought it was like a perfect example of an early 70s theme song. Davy Crockett. How could I forget that? Born on a mountaintop in Tennessee. I don't remember the words. Blah, Davy Crockett, King of the Wild Frontier. Come on, right? That was such a phenomenon. That entire show was more of a phenomenon than we could possibly understand, to the point where they started selling merch, as many shows do. And this is so early in TV land, TV history. They sold the Davy Crockett's hats, those coonskin caps or whatever. And it was a Disney-produced show. The sales from those hats is what enabled Disney to fund the creation of Disneyland. So you can thank television, in a sense, for Disneyland and subsequently Disney World and all the other Disneys. I just love that. Price is Right theme. I don't know if I did enough on, you know, theme songs from game shows like Match Game. I mean, anything like that. But how could I have missed Price is Right? So many of those theme songs from game shows are memorable. I love them. In fact, all the music from Price is Right, like the yodeling dude, and just, I can't even remember all of them, but the Price is Right music is just classic. Kids in the Hall, the theme song from Kids in the Hall, that sketch show from Canada. It's a pre-existing song. I forget the name of it. Unfortunately, I didn't write it here. They used the same theme song when they did the reboot of it last year, I think it was, on Amazon Prime. And that's just a fun song. I enjoy it and it's memorable. That. And then here's the one that I need to shoot myself on, and it's appropriate because of the content. Wild Wild West. I freaking loved that show as a kid, to the point where when our local station decided to end its run and its rerun, it was a rerun. I wasn't old enough to see the original. I wasn't alive. My brother and I wrote into the station to say, bring it back. We love it too much. And now I have the entire collection on DVD and I don't watch DVDs anymore. So I haven't even seen it, you know, which I'm sure I could stream it somewhere, but that's a show that's just fun. Right. Robert Conrad, who started just recently died. Is the theme song. And I absolutely love everything about that show, no matter how much it's probably dated now. And those are the ones I forgot. There are, I think, a couple others that people have mentioned. If not, those should be added to the list of the ones that I said were some of the greatest. And now let's get into some comments for this one. One Cheryl Lundgren commented. She's a Patreon supporter. Thank you. Wonderful. I think that this was something she found online as far as where TV theme songs originated, because I asked that question and I answered it in part, but I didn't know how much of the answer I gave. And this is just another source and another part of that complete answer. Theme songs and catch tunes originated with stage theater and go back a long way in history. Pre-television radio shows continued the tradition and use sound to decorate their shows. Jingles from the sponsor of a radio show or an obvious example, but in a broader way, a random 20-second clip from almost any part of any episode of The Goon Show would instantly identify the show. First popular television show was probably something like the Texaco Star Theater, broadcast on radio from 1938 to 49 and telecast from 48 to 56. It had a theme song that had a certain charm and no doubt drew fans in. Music didn't become an omnipresent feature at the dawn of television. It grew, basically. Television drew on a history of going back to Cockney music halls and before. And that's great. And I would imagine when you think of vaudeville and when you think of even if you think of the old, you know, Bugs Bunny cartoons, and they would often do very vaudevillian things in those cartoons, and how there would be a theme song on with the show. This is it. That was sort of like, oh, and then they do the sketches or whatever else was coming next. That was taken from real vaudeville type experiences and people who knew that, where if it was, you know, introducing a vaudeville duo, comedy duo, there would be a theme song that would be attached to them, or a theme song maybe to the entire vaudeville show. And so you think of something like Cockney Music Hall, which I don't know much about. It's very similar, right? So thank you, Cheryl, for sending that. Comment from Laura Unterweger. Sorry if I mispronounce your name. I believe it's from YouTube. She explained to me, a big Law & Order fan, and I'm not, so I didn't know this, but Law & Order, the different ones, different versions of Law & Order have different variations on that same theme. Dun, 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 dun. And that's cool. And somebody made a kind of a mix on YouTube of all the different variations of the theme, which I just pointed this out. I was watching a rerun of Perfect Strangers, of all things, with my wife a few nights ago. And we were singing Standing Tall on the Wings of My, which, by the way, if you're standing on somebody's wings, there's a real good chance that they can't fly. But I'm just saying that song probably had different versions for different seasons, or at least a couple, because what we don't realize is that long running shows would modify their themes. And I don't mean just cut short or just do an instrumental version, but actually re-record. I talked about that when I talked about Moonlighting, and how Johnny Mathis did a version, etc. And that's apparently the case here with Law & Order, which, by the way, Mike Post wrote. And again, I think if you had to name one person who was the absolute, you know, king of all TV theme songs, you have to go with Mike Post. If there's another one that you think, you tell me. You tell me. Speaking of telling me, Laura also really liked my song. She really liked, which one was it? I guess Lock, Load, Love. Is that what I played? Because that was sort of the theme of a TV type web series. So thank you, Laura, for enjoying that. That's getting some legs, that song, even though it's been around a while. It's going to be used in another friend of mine, Steph Klein's show that she's doing for a classic rock station. She'll be using that as part of a theme or something. I'm not sure how she's using it. Which brings me to, why do I keep talking about television? Well, there's two reasons. It still probably ranks behind music as my favorite arts medium, even more than film, you know, ahead of books, even though I do consume all of those things, ahead of magazines, etc. If there's one thing I would never give up, as far as, and again, setting music aside, it would be television. You know, there's so many deep reasons for that, and so many surface reasons for that. And that's why I did a whole episode on it, even though this is a music related podcast. And I will probably bring it up again and again in various other forms. Also, as a musician, it's important to know television as a music creator. If you're just a musician, not just, but if you're doing cover songs, whatever, hard work, but you're not selling your own music, different. If you're a music creator selling your own music, you're going to want to know a lot about television. I know there are certain shows that I watch where my music, my band Rex Music, would fit perfectly. And in a couple of small cases has fit perfectly because I've watched those shows. I do the research. You look up music supervisors for those shows and you find how to contact them, which is the most difficult part. Now, let me explain for those of you who aren't in this, you know, business or don't do this, why am I saying this? There's something called sync licensing. When you license something, obviously you're selling it for a period of time for a certain type of use. And sync licensing means synchronizing songs to a visual medium, film, television, web, commercials, whatever, industrials, which is small films for, you know, companies, in-house films for companies. Sync licensing is so important as a musician because unless you want to tour all the time or you're lucky enough to have several tens and hundreds of millions of streams, because even a million streams doesn't get you that much money these days, then you make a lot of your money by selling your music. So one of my main pursuits has always been to sell my music. Some of my music has shown up in films and a few on television. And I keep looking for more. I've go to meetings about it. I connect with people. I network and have new information actually that I'm going to be using very soon to try and boost all of the music, not just the new music that's coming out, because the great thing about that is it doesn't matter how old your music and your catalog is. If it's of a good quality and you know how to, you know, pinpoint, oh, you're looking for this track, then this is the song for you. This is the type of song that's needed for that part of the, you know, production. Then any song of any age is useful. You know, I just had some music picked up by a company called MediaNet of an album of mine that's over 20 years old. That was the one they chose. That's going to be streaming in various locations wherever, you know, MediaNet sells its stuff. And do I care that it's not my newest stuff? No, not at all. You know, I would more likely perform my newer music, but it's exciting regardless of how old this music is. And to me, film, yes, of course, but television, there's more of it, so much more of it, especially with streaming, that's really the place to look above and beyond anything else for a good amount and good opportunities for sync licensing. If people have advice out there or know somebody, because knowing someone, or if you're a sync licensing rep who would go out and hustle the music and take a percentage, contact me. I'm doing the phone call thing here because, you know, it's what everybody does. Don't call me. Just contact me, email me or DM me or whatever you want to do. Comment on this. I would love to talk to you. That's why this was the subtitle and sub theme of this freewheeling catch up. But we're not done. We have a few more episodes to comment on. The Neo Soul episode I did, I don't know why. If I don't write it down, I don't say it. Usually, unless it pops into my head, I'm lucky. I didn't write down Adele's name. Adele is clearly the second wave of neo-soul and now the third wave, really, with their new stuff. And I don't understand how I could have forgotten that, so apologies to any Adele fans if you were saying, my God, Adele's neo-soul, how could you? Right. Also, that the colors, and I meant to mention this because my album, the Metro Grand Sessions, which was the one picked up by MediaNet, by that company, I deliberately used the same colors that are found in Neo Soul and even original like 70s Soul, that kind of those kind of brownish, reddish hues, orangish hues, because I wanted to evoke that type of feeling with the cover of the Metro Grand Sessions album. I may as well just pop in, get it here. I'm standing up. And I'm getting it. Hopefully nothing will fall down when I do that. So if you're not watching, youtube.com/appmusicisnotagenre, that's the cover of the Metro Grand Session. So you see what I mean. And that was modeled a lot after old Stevie Wonder albums and the Neo Soul albums that were coming out at that time. And those colors represent the African diaspora as they have done in so many ways and on so many flags and things like that. And mine, of course, is a modification because that's not where, you know, my origin is. But that's what was happening in so many of those Neo Soul covers, which is one thing that linked them to the older soul music. I think that I should re-comment on Robert Glasper and how jazz, and again, Steve Erickson kind of made a comment on this, of today, most of the innovations of new jazz are coming from its meshing with hip-hop. Casa Overall is somebody that Steve turned me on to. I really like his music. There are so many jazz artists who are either doing a hip hop kind of jazz hip hop amalgam, or just you can hear the hip hop influences, like especially with Glasper. Most of what he does has a hip hop influence. Some of it does cross over into the hip hop crossover. And I find that amazing and I find it awesome, especially because if you go back to the history of hip hop in the early 90s, late 80s, and beyond that, you were getting a lot of artists who were incorporating jazz into hip hop. You know, when you think of Bertha Cool, or Bertha Slick, I forget the whatever, Diggable Planets and all of that. And so many of the bands that I mentioned when I was talking about hip hop, and I think when I even did the Neo Soul episode, they were doing mostly sample based, you know, amalgamations of hip hop and jazz. And even the Beastie Boys did that often, and sometimes would be live instruments. Sometimes it would be new stuff, but usually it was either samples or recreations of old stuff. So now it's sort of come full circle. Well, now we're now jazz is saying, well, we want to incorporate some of what hip hop is doing and has done. And I think that's awesome. And I thought it was worth mentioning because it's something that was sort of an after the fact thought from that episode. So I do these catch ups. You too. So I did two episodes. I did back to back Bono's book and U2 in general. And I enjoyed that. I'm hoping to see them live again. It's been a few years and I'm excited for that. But I can't believe, and again, I didn't write it down. That's why I didn't say it. I completely forgot to say anything about Larry Mullen and Adam Clayton. And A, great rhythm section. B, innovative and distinctive. You know them when you hear them. Especially Larry Mullen, but even the more you listen to Adam Clayton's bass work, the more you hear both a simplicity and a melodicism that just serve everything really well, and they both serve everything well. Larry was the first, you know, the person who created the band even before it had the name that it has now. How could I not have mentioned these two people? Adam Clayton, British, but moved to Ireland. You know, and I did mention him, I think, in the context of his drug issues and everything. But I, you know, how could I not mention their musical contributions to the band when, again, this is a foursome that's been together for over 40 years. And I mean, almost 50 at this point. And how many other bands can you say that about? Also, I lived on Adam Clayton Powell Jr. Boulevard. Absolutely no relation. If you know any history of civil rights, you know who I'm talking about. That's also known as 7th Avenue. Up in Harlem in Manhattan, where I lived for several years. And I always thought it was funny and cool that Adam Clayton had like part of that name. And I wonder if his parents knew anything about that, or if it's just a complete coincidence, or if there's some other reason. But, you know, excuse me if you're a U2 fan, and I did not, and I failed to mention Adam and Larry. The next one, the Dickens and Prince episode, another book that's still in my mind in so many ways, because I have a real love-hate thing with it. But a couple of things. One is, I forgot to mention Martin Chuzzlewit. Now, as I mentioned, I'm going through all of the Dickens novels, and that was one that nobody reads, right? There was, I think, a BBC or something of version, series of Chuzzlewit in the 90s that I plan on watching at some point that apparently was pretty good. But the reason I wanted to mention Chuzzlewit is because there was a gay character in Chuzzlewit. And there are characters like that throughout Dickens books, not in every book, but they're there. And Dickens made a point of explaining and expressing, describing this character and the, in some ways, the cultural and social issues that revolved around being a person like this, which if you are anybody in the 19th century, you don't really talk about this. If you are an actual, you know, gay person in the 19th century or anything, like let's say Oscar Wilde, I mean, I think people knew anyway, but you would make light of it, make a joke of it. You'd keep it in the closet. You did that for 100 some years after that, even. And even to this day, in some places in the world and in this freaking country. So the fact that Dickens, yes, admittedly a white man, but at that time in history, who else was going to do it and be able to do it safely and do it without, you know, getting a lot of blowback or whatever. We also forget that at the time there wasn't quite as much of a, you know, how do I put it? The religious fervor over being only being a certain type of person, you know, white male or female or whatever, sometimes didn't really come to a fevered pitch until the early 20th century. So even though there was certainly tons of issues and discrimination and things were not better then, I never say things were better in the past, there was a certain type of, well, these are people who exist in the 19th, 18th, 17th, whatever, 16th century. And if they didn't, you know, go past a certain point of notice, then they were able to exist in the shadows and everything. It was not, but I don't know. The only reason I'm saying this is because Dickens brought it up, and I thought that was great that he did, because he was in the theater. Those are people that he lived and worked around for years and years, as we all have. And, you know, Prince, who's always brought up things like that, or who always did, I think that's another parallel that I wondered why the author didn't mention. I got a comment on Facebook from a fan named Jeremy Jones about this book. I'm not a Dickens fan, not really a fan of any author, just not a huge reader. But a friend who thinks I'm smart and well-read and knows my love for Prince assumed I'd like it. I did. So much so, I've decided to start reading Dickens. I don't know if there's a better comment of anything ever as far as this podcast goes, because it was someone listening to music, who loved music, who's, you know, was then compelled to pick up a novel and get to know a novelist. That's some not a genre shit right there. Music itself is not a genre. It crosses over into literature. But we're almost at the end here. Podfast number 10. Just recently did it. Friend of mine, Steve Erickson. Funny, and I'll make a funny comment later. This podfast was about time bias, which is a big thing with me. He said, I really liked your new podfast. I just avoid music discussion spaces online because I'm sick of the reactionary tastes of most people, especially men my age. On the other hand, spaces dominated by young people can be alienating for other reasons. Very true. And I sort of mentioned that. Like your friend, which, by the way, Steve, you were that friend, and I just neglected to mention your name. I'm not surprised that there are so many conservatives in a Stone Temple Pilots forum. However rebellious grunge looked in the early 90s, it was still hard rock mostly made by white guys playing guitars. And I doubt the people you're complaining about spend much time listening to L7 and Hole or acknowledging the contributions of James Iha and Kim Thayil. Excellent point. And I think that that's a point that I can't state enough, which is we have our own experiences. And so it's some people might say it's surprising that I was surprised that there are so many reactionary white males who listen to grunge, because my experience, again, I'm restating it, was that I liked it because it was new and different. So I'm always looking for new and different things, which would include music made by all kinds of people for all kinds of reasons. He also went on to say, Steve, I've noticed there are a lot of metal and prog fans, especially on Reddit, geez, whose valuing of technical skill over everything else seems to come from an inferiority complex about rock music in order to claim it rivals jazz or classical music, usually without actually listening to them. And I agree with that. I'll say two things about this. One, I agree. I think that anytime anybody makes any comment about technical chops, and that they are, and not any comment, but a comment that they are better or more preferred, that is coming from an inferiority complex. No matter what kind of music it is or what reason you're doing it, whether you're the person playing it or you're describing somebody else, nobody's going to beat Eddie Van Halen, whatever. Which, by the way, I had a great conversation with my bandmates. One of them's recording his own music, Adam Samama. He's talking about how he prefers to get things done in a single take, not a, like do multiple takes, but just take one of those takes instead of comping. And comping means re-recording, and then using pieces of various takes to come up with the best thing. And Rich, who I interviewed on this show, Rich Berta, said that Eddie Van Halen comped his solos, is what he's heard. And Adam's like, oh my God, I can't believe it. And he didn't care that much. But there are people who would be outraged by that. And coming from a place of having done things in one take and done things in 25, I don't care. The best result is the best result. And live is a whole different thing and should be. And so even when you think of technical chops, you might be hearing something that was comped. But I and that's where I agree with Steve, and would expand it to go beyond, you know, prog and metal, that they have an inferiority complex, you know. But I also think that that applies to those forms. Oh, the classical is different because you're creating or playing what's written exactly, even if you put your spin on it. And to have those skills, you need chops. And yes, you do need chops in jazz, but you don't need chops in jazz, because you can do jazz where the chops, again, they come from having a good ear, knowing when to play and when not to play, of rhythm, more than anything to me, rhythm, and a sense of timing and all of that, you know, and harmonics or the, you know, chord changes underlying it. There's not a necessity to have super quick technical chops. If you do, great, and it sounds wonderful, but there are plenty of artists who may have had technical chops like that who preferred to lean in another direction, like Thelonious Monk, you know? So that's where I would say that in other types of music, even that type of thing is not. I'm just, again, it's almost a separate issue from time bias, because it's a different kind of bias. And at the same time, it's a bias that really gets to me. And I do think that there are a lot of people who have great technical chops whose songs just don't fly. They just don't work. And so they make it up by being amazing players. And if that amazing player was serving a song that was awesome in a way that served the song and didn't become the, you know, big hair of the ensemble, then the technical chops are well used. But if it's all about, well, here's a song and I put it together and now here's a riff and now here's how great I am, no one's going to remember that, you know. And I want to hear if you disagree. I have a featured song at the end of this episode. I haven't chosen it yet, so I'm not going to talk about it. It's, you know, something I wish I had done, because I'm usually more prepared than that. But stay tuned for that featured song. As always, my most important, you know, the most important part of this for me is not just what I say at the end of every episode, music, conversation, and connection, but it's sharing my music with you, so that you can hear the things I've been doing for years and understand them in a certain context. So rest assured, I'm going to pick a song that somehow ties into, you know, the TV theme, maybe. I don't know. Boy, this is fun. You're catching me out. Perfect. Catch up episode to catch me out. Thanks again, as always, for watching and listening, and I'll talk to you next week.
Hey, this is Liberty DeVito.
This is Mike Del Judas.
This is Michael Cavanaugh from Broadway's Moving Out.
This is John Jackson, director of the Billy Joel Archive.
This is Russell Javers.
This is Richie Cannata, and you're listening to Glass Houses, a Billy Joel podcast. It's awesome.
I'm Michael Grosvenor.
And I'm Jack Fernino.
We're lifelong Billy Joel fans who launched a podcast in 2020 celebrating the music we love.
Whether you're looking for the greatest hits or the B-sides and rarities, you'll find it all here. And if you've ever wondered what happens behind the scenes of a concert or recording session, we've got you covered.
Join us as we explore albums, tours, band members, the latest news, and more. You'll also get a unique glimpse into the music industry straight from the musicians and other professionals who help make it all happen.
Tune into Glass Houses, a Billy Joel podcast at glasshousespod.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Glass Houses, a Billy Joel podcast is a proud member of the Pantheon Podcasts Network.